This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Mike Ferrugio is a sergeant with the Charlottesville Police Department, and he joins us in studio. And Mike is also a member of the class of 2006 at the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, where I hang my hat during the day. And that's the Political Leaders Program. How has that experience been for you? You're almost done, actually.
Yeah, we are.
Graduation is in early December, so.
It is. It's unfortunate that it's almost done. I mean, we all enjoy it so much and we learn so much that it's disappointing.
Yeah. And for people who don't really know much about what it is, what's the elevator speech you give to somebody when they say, Sorensen Institute, what are you doing? What is that? Where are you
great.
Going this weekend, Mike? What
yeah.
is that?
It's about leadership. It's all about leadership in communities, about nonpartisan politics and how to get people from both sides of the spectrum working together, because most of the issues that we deal with are not really political. They're just local issues that affect local people, and there's no need to get hung up on one's this party or one's that, but work together.
We went this weekend. We were down in Hampton Roads, and we toured the port. That was pretty amazing, wasn't it?
That was amazing.
I mean, that's a hell of an operation. It's the only way I can describe it to
really
somebody.
It really is. And what's really amazing is that's one of the best things about Sorensen is you get exposed to so many things on a statewide level that most people don't think about that go into the decisions that are made that most people don't understand. So once you start getting educated, and, oh, well, that's why they did that, and that's why they did that, it's a wealth of information. And economic development and ports are unbelievable.
Yeah, and when you see what they're doing down there and you see what they have in store over the next 15 to 20 years, and then you look at the tiny little roads going out of Hampton Roads and
it's
the little bridges, and oh, man, I mean, you just all of a sudden you just say, write a check. I don't care where you get the money, bonds or taxes. We need more roads coming out of Hampton Roads fast.
Yeah, roads, transportation was probably the second most critical item that we learned about in the whole year. Just in what dire straits they're in, and
yeah.
how something has to be done.
Right, right. Mike Ferrugio, sergeant with the City of Charlottesville Police Department, and also a member of the Charlottesville Planning Commission. And how long have you served with them?
Just over a year now.
Now, how's that experience been?
That has been awesome, too. I'll just tell you, it's been incredible. It takes a little more time than I thought it was going to take, but it is fantastic serving the city in that way, trying to look at development and look what's going on and try to help make the best decisions for the long term, for the entire city.
Now, for somebody who lives here and perhaps has never even been to City Hall, what mm-hmm. is the Planning Commission? How many people are we talking about, and what do y'all do?
The Planning Commission is seven citizens from the city that are assigned by City Council, and what we do is we make recommendations to City Council for decisions they're going to have to make on issues related to planning and development for the city. So if for the comprehensive plan, the long-term planning, what should be where, we get information and feedback from the community, and we detail that in the comprehensive plan, and that comprehensive plan will guide decision-making for the future. And then there's specific developments that are coming up. We make sure that they meet the requirements of the code and make recommendations to City Council. Now, sometimes some of those projects will give us leeway, like if it's a zoning change or if it's a special use permit, we'll be able to tag on other requirements that we know the city will benefit from and help the citizens of the city.
Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow joins us every Tuesday for a growth and development discussion, and Brian's been updating us on the future skyline of Charlottesville and what's happening downtown with a number of multi-story buildings that are going up and have been before your commission.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen this playing out, you know, 12, 15 months back, your whole tenure on the Planning Commission. You've probably seen these projects coming forward. And it really does. It's going to be a completely different skyline in a few years.
It really is. And that's what planning is all about. I mean, everybody plans every day for their events, what they're going to do during the day. Well, you've got to plan that way long term for the city. What do you want it to look like? Do you want to have 9 and 10 story buildings? Do you want them to only be 4 or 5 stories tall? The whole community's got to make those decisions. And there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just as simple as no. I don't want that. You know, there's economic development that goes into it. There's other land use planning. There's expectations that have already been created. So all of that's got to be taken into account.
Yeah, and some of these buildings are pretty big.
Nine stories is a pretty good-sized building for Charlotte.
And there are a lot of luxury condos. That most of them are, you know, there's some office space, but a lot of them are these mixed use with a lot of luxury condos. And it's what's amazing is to see people actually living downtown in these condos for $2,000 and $3,000 a month. I mean, that blows my mind. When I moved here, the downtown mall was a ghost town.
Yeah.
There was nobody down there after 5 o'clock, even on the weekends.
Yeah.
Unless you were going to Miller's. I mean, and that, or to get dinner at the hardware store restaurant. That was it.
Yeah. 18 years ago, when I first came here in 88 and walked the mall, when you're a new officer here, you walk the walking beat a bit. And walking the mall on evening shift, that's the way it was. We actually had an officer that worked the mall on midnight shift back then. And the only people that would be out that late would be the people that were drunk or people that were looking for trouble. There would be nobody on the mall. It would be a ghost town. When the stores closed at 5, that was it.
Yeah, and it's a good thing y'all were there because if memory serves, back then the downtown mall at night was could be a pretty dangerous place.
It could be. It could be. It wasn't a very big problem, but occasionally something happened. Someone got beat up or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And we definitely want to talk to you about the work that you do in Charlottesville with the police force. But before we do, let's there's an issue that we were talking a few days ago about a bridge in Charlottesville, an old bridge down on JPA, Jefferson Park Avenue, where you head down south of the university and you dogleg to the left.
Yep.
And you go over the railroad tracks right there by the chicken shop.
That's right.
Virginia Fried Chicken.
Yeah, you go into the Fry Spring neighborhood at that point.
Right, right. And tell us what's going on with that bridge, because that's an old little bridge, isn't it?
It is. The bridge is only about two lanes. Well, it is only two lanes and a sidewalk on one side going over the railroad tracks. It is fairly old, and it's been had a lot of heavy vehicles going over it over the years, and it's not in the best of shape right now. The city's limited the weights that go over it. I believe it's 10,000 pounds is the limit right now.
But that's exceeded. You see bigger trucks going.
I know it's exceeded. I personally have seen it once and pulled the car over and dealt with it, and I've heard numerous complaints of trucks going over. It's very hard. I mean, to have the police everywhere at the same time to deter people from doing wrong or to give them a ticket for it is hit and miss. But the bridge is in real bad shape, and it's slated to be repaired right now.
What's the process that you go through to do something like that? Because I know there's some neighbors that aren't really happy with what's going on. Is that right?
Yeah, well, VDOT's got to be involved in any bridge replacement, and that's where the process starts. They got to determine the need, and they've got to come up with the budget, and they've got to come up with the money, and then they've got to come up with the design.
And that takes a long time.
It does take a long time. This year, with this bridge right now, they've come up with a design. The design was based on, my understanding was the design was based on the width of JPA on either side of the bridge. In other words, if you go over that bridge and you go southbound, once you get to Stribling Avenue, you have a beautiful road. It's got two roughly 12-foot lanes.
Big,
it's
median.
It's got 5-foot bike lane on either side, and it's got 5 or 6 feet of a parking lane and then 5 or 6 foot of sidewalks. Plus, it's got that medium that's over 20 feet wide.
Yeah.
So it's about 70 feet wide. So what they did in the designs was they took that 70 feet and just brought it over the railroad tracks and connected it back into the other JPA.
So a bridge, the design would increase the span of the bridge, for the width from what to 70 feet?
It's probably 24, 27 feet now.
To 70
feet. And I've heard different widths from up to 76 feet in width.
So it would basically triple in size,
yeah,
the bridge.
Yeah, pretty big.
Wow. And that has ruffled some Jefferson Park Avenue feathers?
Yeah, it sure has. Rightfully so. That's a huge change. And when, you know, I wear many hats, and it's, you got to bear with me when I change them over here, because I was the president of the Neighborhood Association years ago.
Of that neighborhood?
That neighborhood, Fry Spring. And I still live in that neighborhood, and I'm still involved with the Neighborhood Association. I mean, that's what ultimately got me interested in the Planning Commission and going to Sorensen.
Right.
My stint with the Neighborhood Association. So it's understandable to see a bridge that's 30 feet going to go to 70 feet. It's pretty alarming. And folks want to know why that's got to happen. Why can't it be narrower? You know, we've had workshops in the neighborhood with just the neighbors, some architects and such, to figure out what width we would like the bridge to be.
Right.
But, you know, there's realities that have to play into it that we have to try to understand and work with.
Yeah. VDOT typically likes to build for the long-range future. They're always a few decades ahead of most localities.
Well, you know, that's funny because that goes back to planning, and it's one of the things I'm learning. You can't build a, you know, $50 million bridge and whoops, you know, we forgot, we didn't think about that. You know, you have to plan for what you're going to need in the future. And that's with all roads, and that's what VDOT does. Engineers, it's pretty interesting. If you know the different personalities, you know, they say like doctors have certain personalities. Well, yeah. Engineers have certain personalities, and neighborhood planners have certain personalities, and cops have certain personalities. So it's really interesting to see. And engineers plan very pragmatically. And they think the bridge needs to be this size, and they can justify that, and that's the way they design.
What's the, where are we right now with the process of this JPA bridge?
The design, the preliminary designs have been done by the state, and they're ready to start moving forward. The neighborhood is still talking to the city about having that redesigned. I understand if it's got to be redesigned, potentially that's more time added to the project, and any cost savings from making the bridge smaller might be lost in the time it takes and the price of materials going up.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a lot to consider that folks don't know all of or don't consider all of.
We're talking with Sergeant Mike Ferruggio of the Charlottesville Police Department and the Charlottesville Planning Commission. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Sergeant Mike Ferruggio is with the City of Charlottesville Police Department and the City Planning Commission and joins us in studio live on this Wednesday, November 15th. Can you believe it's the 15th
no,
already?
No, I cannot believe it. It's amazing.
And Thanksgiving is like...
Next week?
Yeah. I was looking at pies today at Whole Foods. My daughter was like, hey, look, there's another one.
It's amazing how fast time just flies by.
Yeah, it is something. Tell me how you got to be a police officer. Is it the kind of thing when you were a kid and you're thinking, hey... You know, because a lot of people who serve in a police force, they can look back to when there was a moment when they were a child or a teenager and they really made a decision. Because I think it's the kind of thing a lot of people are called to do.
Yeah, it's a little different story for me. I was in the Air Force for 4 years, got home, went to New York, and I wanted to be a carpenter. I went to school for carpentry. 2 years. And when I got out
really?
Of the
wow.
When I went tech school.
So you're one of those people that can actually make a chair. A really
well,
nice
I can
chair.
Work with my hands. Yeah. Mechanically inclined.
That's impressive.
And when I went back, I needed a job immediately, and I started laboring. And I labored in New York City for almost 2 years as a mason tender, which is carrying block and concrete, and that was just backbreaking work.
Yeah.
The whole time I was trying to get in the carpentry union, but I didn't have any family in it, and it's very connected in New York. And New York City, I was having a police test. My mom said, why don't you try for the test? And I was like, I'm really not too interested. But I took the test, took a couple of tests, and had apparently an aptitude for it because I scored well on the tests. And when I took the New York City test, I was hired in the first lot. I got hired. So I took the job because it seemed like a good job with good benefits, and I started liking it. I worked in New York City for almost 2 years in Manhattan and in Brooklyn.
Really?
Yeah. And knew at the time I wanted to leave New York, and I tried going to New England. But there was a recession on in 88, for those that can remember,
yeah.
Especially in the Northeast.
October of 88 was the crash, yeah.
It was bad. And what we did was started looking around. My wife met a fella in a deli and, you know, made a phone call to Charlottesville, and the rest is history.
Well, there you go. Now, what's it like working, like, the middle of the night in New York City in the police force?
You know,
you must have a million stories, Mike.
You get a lot of experience when you're working in New York because there's, you know, 7-8 million people in the city alone. So you are,
you see everything.
You see everything. I mean, your first night working, you know, there was a DOA on a road. I mean, the first night working. So it just gets multiplied really quickly, but it's the same thing wherever you go in the entire country. Police work is police work, whether it's in New York City or Charlottesville or Fort Lauderdale or, you know, wherever you go.
And what's the key that makes it good police work that you think from your experience almost 20 years now serving?
It's been just over 20 years now with, if you include New York City.
Oh, right.
What do you mean makes it, what makes it good?
What makes it quality police work? When you can look at somebody up and coming, a new guy and or a new woman, and say, she's going to be good.
Oh, caring about people is huge. I mean, this job gets you jaded very quick. You can, you know, I remember going through both academies, and the one in New York and the one here, and the speech given was don't let police work change your personality, because police officers can become pessimistic, and because you're around good people at their worst times,
yeah.
And worse people at their worst times, almost exclusively. That's what you deal with. So being able to have that, to stick to your personality and not change, not get jaded is difficult.
Yeah. Tell us about the police force here in Charlottesville. How many people are we talking about in the city?
We've got about 120 allotted. We're a little shy right now. We're always looking for police officers. And what I do is I work in the traffic unit. We have three police officers in the traffic unit that take care of traffic enforcement.
Just three?
Yeah.
Just three?
Three.
Wait a minute. The city of Charlottesville only has three police officers who enforce the traffic laws.
Well, every police officer can enforce traffic laws.
Sure, yeah. But I mean,
the problem is the guys working the shifts, they're what we call is calls for service.
Yeah.
They're answering calls for service during their entire shift. So what they're doing is they're going from call to call to call. So they do have some time to squeeze in a DUI arrest or write in a speeding ticket, but it's kind of difficult for them. The department has set aside a unit way back even before I came here to just handle traffic. At the height of it, it had four officers in it. But right now, and for the past several years, we've only had three. Those are the guys you see on the Harleys riding around town.
Yeah,
and what
yeah.
they do is only during daylight hours, Monday through Friday, they enforce all the traffic complaints that we get, speeding on streets, cut through traffic, things of that nature.
Mike, we got to have you back. I'm up against the clock, but will you come back?
Absolutely.
Mike Ferrugio, sergeant with the City of Charlottesville Police Department and the City Planning Commission, will join us again soon.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.